This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, this is really exciting. I have a wonderful guest on, and many of you will remember that a few weeks ago I had Barbara Powell on, the literary agent from Irene Goodman, and she was raving about one of her writers, and here he is, Nick Petrie. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Patsy. How are you today?
Okay, great. Nice to hear you, your voice. When I had Barbara on, she said to me, there's this writer you absolutely must have on your program because he's so fascinating, he's so interesting, and his book is so great. And she started to say, and Lee Child had wonderful things to say about him. And so then she said, and he's a house inspector. And I said, and I said, Nick Petrie. I didn't know it was pronounced Petrie, but you know, I was so happy to hear that you have your second book out, because your first book, The Drifter, was so great. And the new book, the new book is amazing. I'm holding it up to the camera because we're on also podcast here. And it's called Burning Bright. And the cover is beautiful. It's a fantastic book.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Well, I always love when there's a really great prologue that really grabs you. And this prologue is, that's a great prologue.
I had a funny conversation online with somebody who said they hate prologues, but they really like this one.
Yeah, well, you know, there are people, I know people who absolutely don't read the prologue. They say, I'm not going to read the prologue. I don't want, but there are some people who are just masters of prologues. Clive Cussler is one. His prologues are amazing. I've crowned him the king of prologues because his prologues are so terrific. But this prologue, I love a book when you get action. And I thought, this guy is serving it up really, and it's fantastic.
Well, it was a lot of fun to write. One of the things about Burning Bright that people keep asking me about is June Cassidy, who is sort of the person that we meet in the prologue, and she is she's let's say the love interest in this story, and the challenge for me was what was her voice going to be like, how was she going to sound, and once I sort of fell into that piece that became the prologue, I knew I can do this, and she's I kind of know who she is, and I know where she's coming from, and she's so much fun to be with because she's pretty unpredictable and doesn't take many prisoners in general.
Exactly, she is fun. I mean, and you manage in this prologue to set the whole story, the background, the thing, the suspense, all the mystery, everything is all rolled into this fantastic prologue, and then of course we get to the first chapter. Now, you have developed a wonderful character. Now, I'm going to read for my listeners who haven't read the book yet or haven't seen the blurb. Lee Child says, this is what Lee Child says, "Lots of characters get compared to my own Jack Reacher, but Peter Ash is the real deal." Woo! That's nice,
yeah.
Huh?
High praise coming from Lee Child.
Absolutely.
And the funniest thing about that is that we had no idea he was saying nice things about the book. he did a blog interview with someone where they asked him kind of what the last good book he was reading, and he talked about The Drifter, which is my first book, which actually was just nominated for an Edgar Award. And that sort of came out of the blue. And then, and it kind of, we didn't even quite know that it happened. And then he was on a radio interview, and someone said, well, so what are you reading that you're enjoying? And again, he talked about The Drifter. And so my publishing team reached out to him and said,
yeah,
thank you so much. And he's since gone on to recommend it on Amazon as one of his 2016 celebrity picks. It turns out this is a sort of a project of his, is that he finds newly published authors whose work he likes, and he's got a really big megaphone, and he uses that to help writers he admires. And what he told the interviewer on this radio program is that it's pure self-interest on his part, because he needs something else to read. he's always looking for stuff to read. So, I could not be more grateful. And of course, I'm a huge fan. I've read all of those books.
Well, he's fantastic. And to have this blurb on the cover right across the top, it is wonderful for a writer. And that I love that about writers who are generous. They really go out of their way to help other writers. And this is always, it's so heartwarming to see this type of relationship, that a writer will try to nurture another writer coming up.
Well, the funny thing about, for me, the best thing about The Drifter coming out and sort of being introduced to the crime fiction community, whether you're talking about, mystery writers or thriller writers or suspense writers or, these are people who write about terrible things. Their characters are murderers and rapists and serial killers and decapitators and but those characters aside, the writers are the nicest people, and they really are very kind of generous and welcoming. And it really feels like, in a way, sort of coming home for me. I went to an event in New York. I went to Thriller Fest, and it was like, oh yeah, these are my people. These writers are my people. And I hadn't gone to those events for a while. I was sort of I was running a business and raising a family and sort of living my dream sort of in secret and writing and suddenly had a hilarious conversation with Barbara Powell, my agent, who said, boy, I hope you really think I'm your agent, because The Drifter is really good, and you're really gonna, this book is going to be very successful. So, did Barbara tell you the story of how we reconnected?
No, you tell us.
Well, so The Drifter is the first book that I published, but it was the fourth book that I'd written, and the first book I couldn't find an agent. I had some agents send me nice sort of sorry not for us notes. And had a couple of agents who said, boy, you should really just stop writing completely and go do something else. you really do have to develop a thick skin. The second book, I found an agent who was a West Coast agent and not a terribly successful person, but she was an agent, and she tried to sell my second book, and that didn't work. My third book, I found Barbara, who is a New York-based agent and is a super energetic, smart, go-getter. She's really fantastic at her job. She was trying to find that book a home right basically at the same time as the economic meltdown. And all the publishers said, we're not going to buy any new works by anybody. So that was the end of that. I tore out my kitchen, which we refer to in my house as sledgehammer therapy. I sort of told myself while I was going to be done writing that this just wasn't working out. I'd written three books. I was making progress, but it seemed like pretty incremental progress. But then my wife said, you're not a lot of fun to live with when you don't have a writing project. So I started the book that became The Drifter, and I spent years writing it and making it better. And when it was finally time to reach out to Barbara, I looked her up again online and realized she was less than a week away from going on maternity leave for 3 months. And so I sent her an email saying, I don't know if you remember me. You represented me for this other book, and this was, years and years ago. And then I wrote kind of my, kind of a very nice, tight query letter as if we'd never met before. And she emailed me back a couple hours later saying, you know, you silly goose, of course I remember you. I always felt bad. I really liked that other book. Don't send me 50 pages, send me the whole book. So I sent her the whole book. 2.5 days later, she called me to say, oh, I really hope you think I'm still your agent. So she's the kind of agent who puts off maternity leave to champion a book. And a month later, we had two offers.
Wow. Well, she is fantastic. And she's been on the program a couple of times because my listeners love her. I mean, she gets right to the point and she's so enthusiastic. And it's just wonderful to talk to her.
Well, she's kind of a no BS sort of person. You know, she's like that in her email. She's like that in her text. She's kind of a piece of work, that Barbara, and I'm grateful for it. There could be nobody better in your corner.
Well, she's done a terrific job. She got The Drifter. Well, that really hit very big. If Lee Child found it, we know that it was hitting the right market. And then, of course, with the new book, it comes down, in the end, it comes down to character and character development. And you have created a character as memorable as Jack Reacher, for sure, because it's just, you know, when you have put together Peter Ashe, who has claustrophobia, who has all of these characteristics of somebody who is, you know, he's suffered through several deployments, and this relates so much to what is happening in the world with all of the veterans that we have, both the men and the women who come back from these wars, and they suffer all of these things. And you have just built this character into somebody who is really easy to get involved in his dilemma and worrying about, is he going to solve, you know, be able to keep going.
Well, I'm glad you say that. I'm somebody who really firmly believes that character is what makes every novel, whether you're writing science fiction or mystery or certainly literary fiction. I'm not a big fan of the sort of the distinctions of the genres like that in general. But you know, if I don't care about the person, I'm not going to really care about what happens to the person. You know, for any aspiring writers out there, that's the place to start, and you can carry your reader along on all kinds of crazy journeys if they believe in the character, and if the character's kind of internal you know, structure, their motivations, the things that they care about, if those motivations drive them forward, you can get that character through all kinds of situations. And one of the challenges with writing crime fiction in general is the suspense of disbelief. Oh, this is too crazy. This is too over the top. And I wanted from the beginning for Peter Ashe not to be kind of the ex-military superhero type. You know, there are wonderful books that have that main character that I like to read. But you know, I hadn't seen this sort of character with that felt as real as I thought they could feel. And in part, this was because I had talked to a number of veterans over years who were my clients in my home inspection business. So it started out after the surge when vets were coming home and buying homes, and I started talking to people and really started to realize how little I knew, not just about what they'd been through overseas. I followed the political piece, but it wasn't part of my community. One of the things about a professional military is that they come from a smaller and smaller section of America, as opposed to the Vietnam era, which was a draft, or you know, World War II, where, you know, everybody went. So I sort of realized, boy, there is this whole piece of America that I really don't know very much about. And the more people I talked to and the deeper I dove into it, the more I wanted this to feel like a real person, and not, you know, like I said, sort of a Superman character.
Well, and he has an intelligence and a sort of an intellectual capability, I think, that is very refreshing. It's not all bronze. Just he's going to, knock everybody down. There's always this element of him thinking through the problem and thinking how he's going to solve it.
Well, and I think that's the thing that reminds people of Lee Child's Jack Reacher character, is that, you can sort of smell the intelligence. The character is reasoning his way through. And I didn't realize this until not too long ago when somebody told me that Lee Child is not an outliner, that he basically, he basically writes forward from an idea, not really knowing where things are going to go. So really, what you're reading is not just Jack Reacher's intelligence finding a way through the problem, but it's Lee Child's intelligence finding the way through the problem. And I write in very much the same way. I have no idea where the story is going. And it's only really, the Drifter, it wasn't really until I got to the last 50 pages where I sort of knew where I was going to end up. And then I, in subsequent edits, I went back through and I, tidied things up. But it's through that process, it's fascinating to know how much work the subconscious has done to lay the groundwork for something I didn't know was happening. And Burning Bright was very much the same way. It was probably 75 pages from the end where I really knew how this was going to play out. And I didn't have to do many revisions. It's an interesting process. And it's almost, for me, about learning to trust sort of the lizard brain in the back of my head that, sort of subconsciously helping me make some decisions along the way.
Well, you know your character, and you've been able to get into his skin. And I think, my husband was in real estate, and so we also went through this process of bringing people and they're, looking for their homes. And it's amazing how much they will talk to you, because you learn about their dreams and what they're looking for in the house and why they want something, what it is, the element that is important to them. And so I was very moved when I discovered that you were a house inspector, because the house inspector does meet these people and does get into these conversations.
Yeah, it's a funny thing to do for a living, because I meet people for a relatively brief period of time. It's not an ongoing relationship for the most part. I mean, people will email me afterward or call with a question, which is absolutely fine. But it's not like being somebody's dentist, where you see them over and over again. But so I have 3 or 4 hours worth of conversation, in part where I'm showing them how their house works, but in part I want to know who they are so that I can explain things to them properly. If my client is a poet, I'm going to talk about things a bit differently than if they're an engineer or a software developer. Some people want a different level of detail. Some people really are just looking for the big picture. Some people, honestly, really would rather not know anything. They just want to imagine where the furniture is going to go. So I've done now, I think over 6,000 home inspections. I've been doing this for about 15 years. And, looking at the homes, it has become the boring part for me. It's the people that have become the most interesting part. And I meet, all kinds of people. And I've always been somebody, and I wonder if this is true of other writers too, but I've always been somebody that people tell the strangest things to. I'm standing in line at the grocery store with Will. I'll strike up a conversation and they'll tell me they're getting a divorce. or they'll tell me that their dog just died, or that their daughter just got into, Stanford, it's people tell me the strangest thing. And I wonder if that's something that other writers experience, or if I just maybe have that face.
That people can be comfortable with you.
Maybe so.
Because you yourself have no military background, but yet you write this character. You don't concentrate on the military side. You concentrate more on the psychological side, the human side of what he's gone through.
Well, part of it is that I wasn't there. I mean, I wasn't overseas. And for me, writing is really about capturing a full sensory experience. What do things smell like? What do things, you know, what are the sounds? And it was hard enough for me to give myself permission to write about being a veteran because I hadn't done it. But I really couldn't give myself permission to write about what it was like to actually be overseas. And there are great books written by veterans about that experience. There's a whole slew of them that have come out in the last 5 or 10 years that are really quite lovely. And I didn't A, want to step on their toes, and B, I just didn't feel like I could do it justice. But the idea of the challenges of coming home, of having your life be altered inexorably, you know, I'm over 40. I've lived through all sorts of things at this point in my life, and that was something I felt like I could talk about. And I was really interested in this idea. We've put any number of people, I don't know what the total number is, but really through hell. And we haven't really put a whole lot of thought into how to help them come back to anything resembling a normal life. And between the challenges at the VA, certainly funding related, and also there are some issues of how well it's being run, but a lot of it is just they have a huge job to do and not a whole lot of money to do it with. You know, this is sort of the issue of our time is how are we going to treat the folks that we've asked to go fight a war for? And that was kind of what captured me. And I didn't really know I was writing a book about veterans until I got to the end of the first draft, and I realized that every character in The Drifter had been affected by the war in one way or another, either as a direct combatant or as a family member, with the exception of one person who is really kind of the profiteer. So I don't know. I sort of backed into this as an issue, but it's something I've become. Maybe you can tell just how I talk about it, but I've become very passionate about it.
Well, that comes through in the books, and I think that's why the. Your books are really so enjoyed and selling so well because there is something in your books that touches people. They do start to understand. They start to think about PTSD in a different way, not just a few letters from the alphabet of what it really means for somebody to suffer this kind of flashbacks or fears, and that they have to learn to cope with this and what they go through. And I think that's one of the great things about your books.
Well, thank you.
And, of course, it all comes down to this development of a wonderful character in Peter Ash and now June Cassidy. And, of course, you also have a wonderful minor character. What would we call Lewis?
Well, I don't know that he's he certainly carries a lot of the load.
Yeah.
And he's very charismatic. So I don't know that I really think of anybody as a minor character.
No,
I try to give everybody who shows up their own personality, even if they're just in the book for a couple of pages. My goal is really to have you see everybody as a person. I don't even the bad guys. I want you to really know who they are and to understand that even the bad guys, even the villains, think that they're the heroes of their own story. So, what I try to do as a writer is to try to sort of empathize my way through. But Lewis is. I don't want him to be a sidekick because it would be easy for him to be in that role. But in a way, he's. I don't know. He's a true friend, and in a way, he illustrates some of that, some of the relationships that can develop among people who have been deployed together. There's a depth of commitment, even if they don't have a whole lot in common otherwise. And he and Peter would do anything for each other.
Well, you've done a tremendous job with this book. I think it's a fantastic book, and I'm recommending it to everybody to read. It's nice, just the right length. I don't like books that are too short, and it's just the right length. And it's just the part. I really like June Cassidy character. I think you've done a great job with her, and I'm just so thrilled, to be talking to you because, as Barbara said, you are an amazing writer. And I always tell people, you know, when you meet, it's so funny. People will meet somebody, and they won't in doing one job, and they won't think what do they do on the side, like. You meet a house inspector, and you have no idea that he's also, writing and a brilliant writer. And I recently had on a guy who was a mailman, and in between delivering mail, he's writing these really fantastic books. And it's so funny that it's part of the thing of looking beyond when getting to know people. It's like when people will talk to you, there must be something instinctive about it that they. A look on your face that says, I'm open to hearing about you. I want to know something. I want to learn more. And so it's always fun to me. I tell people don't be dismissive of anybody doing any occupation because you don't know they're the next Lee Child.
Well, Brian Panowich still works as a firefighter. He wrote Bull Mountain. Steve Hamilton, who I would hope your readers would know, worked at IBM while he wrote the Alex McKnight books, and really for a long, long time. There's very few writers, and because it's not a particularly secure profession, it takes a while to be successful enough before anybody makes enough money to really live off of it, and most people never make enough money to really live off of it, and there's no health insurance, and there's no I run into people all the time who think because my book's been reviewed in the Philadelphia Inquirer that I'm driving a Lamborghini, and it takes a while for that to happen, and most writers never get to the point where they feel secure enough to not do something else for a living. And in a way, the best thing about being a home inspector is. I'm out there in the world talking to strangers. I'm crawling around people's houses. It's a great way to interact with the world. It's a good antidote to sitting in my office staring at the screen all day and really kind of not, I'm kind of scratching my head most of my time as a writer, saying, what would happen here? Or, no, that's not a good sentence. There's a better way to do that. And as a home inspector, I've been doing it for a long time. I was a building contractor before that. So I'm very comfortable in houses, and I really feel like I know what I'm doing. As a writer, I never really want to know what I'm doing. I always want to be sort of pushing the envelope, trying new things. So it's good to do something else. Actually, the idea of being a mailman is really appealing because you just walk around all day thinking your thoughts.
Exactly, and after he told me that, I was thinking, oh my gosh, every on his route, he knows just from where the envelopes come from. He knows so much about people's lives. You know, if they're getting social security checks or if they're getting bill collections, or so he knows. You could just spend your whole day just walking around, coming out with new stories. So.
That's actually a really compelling idea. That's kind of fun.
Isn't it?
Oh, that's great. Who's the writer?
Huh? Johnny Clark. And he's Clark. Really good. He's his stories are fantastic. And one of his stories is called Guns Up. Now, he's military. He's real military, a real hero, from fantastic man from from Vietnam. And his books are very, very good. And so I was just so thrilled to find that out. And that's why I always say to people, look beyond what they're doing. And there could be something really fantastic that they're doing, like early in the morning or late at night, and they're at their computer. So you've done a great job with Burning Bright. And you have a web page?
I do, nickpetrie.com, or you can actually find me at nicholaspetrie.net as well. So it depends on how you know me.
Okay.
You could also Google Nick Petrie the Drifter, and you'd find me that way. Nick Petrie Burning Bright, you'd find me that way.
And the books are, of course, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere that books are sold. So, Nick, I want to thank you so much. It's just wonderful to talk to you. And I know that Barbara is so, so thrilled to have you as one of her writers. She just raves about you all the time. So I really want to thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been my great pleasure and a lovely conversation. Thanks, Patsy. I appreciate
it. Okay. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side. On the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I'm back, and in a minute I'm going to be talking to a really great writer. Now, what were you doing when you were in high school? Were you sitting there listening to the teacher? Were you paying attention? Well, Lisa Gardner was not. She was sitting in the back row trying to hide out from her teacher, and she was writing her first romance novel. Oh, boy. I look back on it, and I think, why did I always sit in the front row? I should have sat there in the back row writing. Lisa wrote... Started at 17. By 20, she had her first book published, and she then went on to write 13 more romance novels. And then she found crime, and she found out that crime does pay. Now, 22 million books later, she is really, really at the top of her mark here. So I'm just going to talk to Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lisa Gardner, an author who hits the New York Times bestseller list every time a book comes out. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the show.
Well, it's so exciting for me. I know you have so many fans, and so many of the writers who are listening to my program mention your books as inspiration when they are talking about writing thrillers, because you have certainly captured that market of writing real thrillers. I know that your last book, of course, was on the New York Times best-selling list for over 6 weeks, and the new book called Right Behind You is sure to do the same.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you've met so many milestones in a writer's career. First of all, you got published when you're just 20 years old, which is pretty fantastic.
Yes.
Wow. And then, of course, you know, every time you hit a milestone, do you like just pinch yourself how that this has actually happened? When you hit a million books, what did you do?
Oh, I wish I'd been paying attention. You know, I think anyone who gets to be a full-time novelist, it is just, you're just lucky. There's no doubt about it. I wrote my first book when I was 17 because I love to write. The fact that I was able to sell it when I was 20, and now this is what I get to do. I come up with, you know, these, you know, crimes, asking these questions of who would do such a thing, you know, what is criminal mind, how do we catch them? And then I actually do get to call, like, real law enforcement people and get the answers. It's amazing to me each and every time.
Well, you know, I was thinking about you last week. I was called for jury duty. It was the very first time that I was ever called. And as I was there, you know, called up as part of a panel of 40 people, and we're waiting and we're being asked these questions and we're in the courtroom. And I was thinking about you. I know that one of the things that you always tell people is that they can use the resources around them, that they can call up the police and ask them for, ask them questions. And I'm thinking, well, here, this courtroom was just an ideal research for you know, a story. As a matter of fact, during the questioning of the panel, I think by the end, several of us were ready to kill some of the other people because they just went on and on and on, and we thought we'd never get through the questioning. But it was funny that, yes, you can call lawyers, you can go to the court and sit and listen to trials. Mary Higgins Clark was telling me that when she was young, that's what she used to do. So, and of course, your research is amazing.
You know, the whole inspiration for Right Behind You is that I happened to read an article on fugitive tracking. And it's not something I knew much about, but it's becoming more relevant. We had that huge case in upstate New York where the two prisoners escaped and were on the run and not going to be taken back alive. So to read all these techniques, to learn how dangerous this work really is, like, this would be great for a book. But, you know, I'm just reading an article in a magazine. So, of course, I look up the guy's byline, I look him up on Google, and I just cold called him. Would you like to help with a novel?
Well, he must have
thought it was funny, but okay.
Well, he must. His name, of course, is Pat Patton, right?
Yeah.
And he has put you into his shoes, literally. I mean, this whole part where he is doing the tracking is so... It's what we use the word thrilling. I mean, really thrilling and really page turning, because you have he's done a marvelous job with you. You make the tracking process so, first of all, exactly what he said, that it's not technology. It takes a human being. Even a robot can't do such talented work.
So for Right Behind You, you have, you know, a 17-year-old on the run, heavily armed, already suspected in the deaths of four people, including his foster parents, in a spree-killing situation, as the FBI profilers explain. The suspect is no longer in their right mind. They have basically had a psychotic break. They will most likely shoot and kill anyone unfortunate enough to cross their path. So it's very high danger. It's urgent. You need to catch this person as quickly as possible. And that's the tracker's job. In the entire wilds of the mountains of Oregon, he's got to find this 17-year-old kid before more people get hurt. It's that tense and that scary.
Well, and you certainly bring this element of tense and fear and absolute, you know, terror of what's sort of around the corner, what's going to be at the end of that that tunnel that, you know, he's walking through or something. So it's very exciting. And we should mention, of course, this is part of your series, the FBI Profiler series.
Yes, so for the record, you don't have to have read any of the past books. I mean, the entire novel is 36 hours. That's how high-paced this is. So, you know, what has happened before to the FBI profilers is not nearly as relevant as what's about to happen next.
Exactly. But, of course, this is a fantastic series. Rainey Connor and Pierce Quincy and his daughter Kimberly and this FBI. What is remarkable about your writing is, you know, so many times the writer has experience in law enforcement, or if it's an intelligence or even military experience, but this is all coming from your mind, which is a very interesting.
Even I'm scared of me.
It's a little bit scary, that mind of yours. But I mean, you come out with all of these ideas, and then the beautiful thing is that you do this deep research, and that you manage to get through to all these people who are willing to share their knowledge with you, and then you bring this to the reader.
Research is my favorite part of the writing process, and I hope readers will walk away having been, definitely kept on the edge of their seat, but really feeling like, oh my gosh, I never knew trackers did that. I never knew this about spree shooters. I never knew how hard it was to be a 17-year-old boy about to time out of the foster care system with no hope in sight.
Well, you do. You bring this, all of this in this book, as you said, it's such a tight time frame. And after you finish reading, you say, my gosh, all that happened in that short of a period of time. And it's like breathtaking.
Well, thank you.
Well, and of course, one of the reasons I really enjoy reading this book is that it comes as a result of the way that fans love you and the way that fans follow you and that you relate so well to fans. Not every writer has on their webpage interact, so yeah. it's really nice. Writers have to go out there and push their book, but you also make that sort of extra step of interacting. And so this story came as a result of a Facebook poll.
Yes, because I've written some different characters. I asked readers to pick who they would like to, hear from next. And it was a surprise to me, the FBI profilers, because it's been a bit. But I think that's exactly, it's flattering to know that you wrote characters people miss and they wanted to catch up with again. But I also invite readers to become, even more involved with the story. They can enter the Kill a Friend, Maim a Buddy sweepstakes on the website.
I think that's so cute. I love it.
Yes, they can nominate the person of their choice to die in a novel. So, that's real true fans right there.
Exactly. Okay, people can live on forever by dying in one of Lisa
exactly.
Gardner's books. So you had a winner here and the victim.
Yep. Yes, there's two winners in the book. One was a victim, and then one actually, because it is meant to all be fun, decided in the end they'd like to live, so she became a doctor. I think she's one of the criminal experts. So
okay, well, I think that's wonderful. And as I said, fans just remember characters when they're well-developed, like this in this case. Rainey and Quincy, I think, are two of the best sort of pair-up of suspense characters, and you've done a great job with them.
Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And of course, the story is set in Oregon, right?
Yes. And my roots are in Oregon, and for locals out there, they'll recognize the Tillamook Cheese Factory, the Oregon coast, and it's absolutely beautiful and breathtaking. So, of course, it's the perfect place to have a spree killer.
Yeah, exactly. And as you do make that entire area, it's so well written. I really felt like you were right there, when you wrote it.
Perfect.
So it worked out perfectly. So as I was saying, fans are always interested in how you, of course, you got your first book through a query letter.
I drafted my first book at 17. I didn't know anyone in publishing. I just followed the straight submission process, basically just requesting permission to submit. So yes, you know, publishing is, anyone with a great idea you know, can publish a novel. So it just takes patience and hard work. And even that book was about, you know, someone who runs a shelter for homeless teenagers who witnesses a murder. So you can kind of see the theme 25 years later, still the social issues, but definitely crime, crime, crime.
And it was funny, you mentioned in your bio, I think it's one of the reviews or something, that you were in Latin class when you started writing.
And yes.
That was cute. And I was thinking, I was in Latin class and I wasn't smart enough to sit there and write my first novel. Wow. But I did enjoy Latin, so I guess I got something out of it. But which of the milestones really has sort of given you the biggest kick, besides, of course, being a New York Times bestseller? Now I think you've hit 20 million books.
Yes.
So that must have been a highlight. And what about getting a page on Wikipedia? Wasn't that sort of nice?
You know, probably the moment for me where it became more real is I had a book, Hyde, turned into a TV movie. And to see someone like Carla Gugino, who is an actress I knew from Night at the Museum, actually playing one of my characters, just started to make it all feel so real. And that book opens with this underground pit where there's supposed to be six, you know, bodies. So they had to build it. So the set designer's walking me through this thing, and he has baby dolls, you know, nailed to the support. And, I mean, even I think it's terrifying. And I'm like, wow, this is like my mind come to life.
Yes.
I really am twisted.
I wasn't going to say that, but yes, I think so. And I it must be really thrilling to be able to get on the set and see, you know, be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And it just, again, anytime something like that just, you know, that it's now larger than you. Like, it's become something for other people as well. It was really neat.
Oh, I think you've done just an amazing job. It's hard to believe that in so few, well, what is it, 20 years?
Yeah.
About 20 years, and you've written, I don't know how many books now, a lot of them.
Yes.
So what happens if you do your next poll and everybody wants a romance story out of you again? How do you relate now to the romance side that you, of course, have done brilliantly?
It's all about the characters. And, I mean, romance novels were a great way to learn character because for those readers, the who is what matters. But I like my dark and stormy nights and, you know, again, the psychology of crime. So, you know, that's, you know, where the future novels will lay.
Well, you are an amazing writer. And as I said, we have to investigate this mind of yours because you look so so absolutely sweet and adorable. And and then here you are walking around the woods, coming out with and I understand you like to walk around the woods and come out with these ideas, so it's sort of a little bit scary. But, you know, it's really quite amazing. And what I like exactly is your advice to writers that they can reach out, and they often don't think that, you know, like the police will answer their questions or that they could reach out to people. And I think that's important, you know, for them to recognize this possibility.
Yeah.
And as you said, I think research is the most fun. It's than sitting, having to sit down for, how long does it take you to write a book? 5 months, 6 months?
Writing a novel is a year-long process.
Three
months of research, 6 months of writing, and then 3 months of, you know, just trying to get it all right.
Well, you have done an amazing job with this new book. And as I said, your website is really nice, and it's just lisagardner.com. And I suggest everybody just go to it and have fun and hit that interact button and nominate somebody and kill a friend or maim a buddy, whatever.
Maim a buddy, yep.
I think that's wonderful. And I know that your fans will be thrilled with this new book because it is, when they say a page turner, it's a page turner. And I'm just so very happy that you came on my program today because I know, as I said, so many of my... Your Joy on Paper is a program where I am encouraging writers to just keep writing, not to give up. You know, sometimes it's hard. It's writing's not easy, and then having to go out there and try to find an agent and to get your book published is not easy, but it's persistence and, of course, working on your craft, and you certainly have worked on your craft.
Well, you know, they talk about the 10,000 hours. That's how you have to think of it. It's not whether you were rejected or accepted. It's like at all times are you working on your 10,000 hours. That's how you become an expert on anything. So worry less about the publishing, which you can't control, and more about sitting and writing and logging your 10,000 hours, which will make you, which will, by definition, bring you the talent you need to be published.
Exactly. Exactly. Great advice for all of my listeners. And I just want to encourage everyone to get out there and get Lisa Gardner's new book called Right Behind You, because it's going to head straight up on that New York Times best-selling list. And I think you're up to 22 million books, and this is going to get you up there a little higher. And wow, what is the craziest thing that you've done with one of your big advance checks? What's the craziest thing you've done? Have you flown off to Paris, taken the Orient Express? What's the craziest?
No, the issue is when you're a contracted writer, you're always under deadline. So it's nice that now you're getting paid versus the first 10 years when you don't. But by definition of being a professional writer, you're under deadline. You got to work again.
But it does give you opportunities, and I know that you are so popular overseas. It's amazing how your books have been translated, and you've been honored, I think, with many awards in Paris and other places, right?
Yes, and Crash and Burn is actually on the bestseller list on France now, and I'll be there in March to promote that novel.
Wow. Okay. Well, again, thank you, Lisa Gardner, for being on Joy on Paper today. It's wonderful to talk to you, and have fun on the best-selling list for another 6 weeks or 8 weeks or even longer.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, she's nice. I really like Lisa. And I wanted to remind everybody that Carol J. Perry's new book, Murder Go Round, just came out on Tuesday. I forgot to tell you that on last Tuesday, but it is a wonderful book. It is highly recommended by not just Carolyn Hart, the Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster, but by my sister, Natalie, who is a connoisseur of cozy mysteries, and she just loves Murder Go Round. So get that book and have a wonderful weekend reading it. It's just a wonderful little mystery, and just perfect for the weekend. Now, I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken out loud on audible books or on stage or on screen. But the point is you have to get the words on the paper first. So start writing. And meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And be back here next Tuesday at 11 a.m. here on Tantalk Radio, because I have a really exciting program on Tuesday. So have a great weekend. Bye for now.